This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, and we are honored and delighted to be with President Marvin Krisloff from Oberlin College. Bill Russell had given you the opportunity to answer all questions metric.
Well, I've been struggling with this for a long time, and why not go straight to somebody who's got the answer?
You know, this is one of the great questions right now in higher education. And
well, it's not just higher education. This goes all the way down.
That's right. And education generally. And the Spellings Commission looked at some of this. And this is a burning...
I don't know who Spellings Commission are.
So Margaret Spellings is the Secretary of Education, and she had a commission that looked at trying to calculate how we are doing in higher education. And when you get into these discussions, of course, there are apples and oranges and pears and bananas, too. So that's part of the challenges. So there are two-year colleges and there are 4 years, and there are some that are more research-oriented and so forth. There are certain metrics that we can all agree are valuable, things like graduation rates. The challenge, though, may be that sometimes in the graduation rates, you don't count people who either transfer in or transfer out and successfully complete. And there may be people that decide midstream that a place is a better fit for them or not than the place they started. Most colleges like Oberlin have very high graduation rates, and so the difference between them may not be that high, although some may have slightly lower. One of the things we also try to look at is what happens in those 4 years. So not just whether someone comes out with a degree, but what happens within those 4 or sometimes 5 years, because we have double degree programs for students who are both getting the music degree as well as the liberal arts and sciences degree. But what happens within that period of time? And there are certain things that we might look to, like senior projects, if they can produce a research paper, if they can necessarily create a performance that is at a high level for music. One of the things that Oberlin's very proud of is that we have had a higher number of students go on to graduate programs and earn PhDs than virtually any other institution in America over the past 50 years. And so to the extent one looks at those 4 years and looks at success in going on to get the PhD, Oberlin is very successful.
Part of why I think this is an important subject is that we've gotten, in my opinion, so off track with all this, what I think of as calamitous No Child Left Behind, that when you talk about metrics, people immediately go to the No Child Left Behind and the little kids being stuck with an education that's all directed toward taking tests that has very little to do, as near as I can tell, with education or learning.
Right. But the difference is, that's correct. The difference to me is you are you sort of have the luxury and in some ways the obligation of doing what primary and secondary schools can't do.
Yeah, that's but true. You're and upstream from that, and so you're affected by that.
Absolutely, but in terms of development, which is why I'm interested in his perspective. I mean, for all it's easy to criticize, and we do, No Child Left Behind, it comes out of, at least for a lot of people, a legitimate concern, which is this metrics question. The problem in local school systems is the politics of it, the economics of it, the cultural. And one of the things that seems to me one of the roles of colleges and universities is to provide that thinking. You've got this pool of smart people who have expertise in relevant subjects, and we would like to be able to look to their colleges and universities to answer these kinds of questions and to do it in the kind of sophisticated way that I think you're talking about.
Well, and one of the things we do try to do is we do invest a lot in the local public schools. We provide instruction in languages. For instance, we have a Spanish language program that goes into the schools. And we have a lot of service learning. And well over half of our students are involved in some sort of volunteer activity, particularly through the schools, but not only through the schools. And I think that we are looking more toward pipeline school projects. Because as you say, colleges and universities do have some expertise in this area. Sometimes it's not as deep because there may be some connections and disconnections, but I think that colleges and universities are going to be doing more of this, particularly as we realize that K through 12 is not necessarily working the way it should. But it is a problem, and I think, this is speaking for me, but I think that our society as a whole needs to invest more in K through 12, and that we can't expect colleges and universities, which have some but limited expertise in this area, to be able to save or to improve the K through 12 system on our own, because there are resource issues as well as expertise issues. And I think, you know, we do have a tremendous social challenge ahead of us, and I think that it's important for the government as well as the philanthropic sector and the corporate sector to really think about it. And there's some wonderful examples. The Gates Foundation, obviously, is one that are really trying to address this. But I think the challenges of public education in particular are tremendous and need the best minds.
And one of the challenges I find myself, you know, we're working with people here in Georgia, both in the local schools and the statewide. I find myself at some point coming home and looking in the mirror and said, what is education about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is the point of educating young people? And you know, there's a certain minimal that you know, you'd like for people to be able to read, which is a challenge,
mm-hmm.
more than I think most of us acknowledge. You know, we'd like for them to be numerate to some degree. You know, at least be able to count to 10 or 20.
The year 2012.
But as you move further up, particularly when you get to colleges and universities, and it's still it's not a small minority, but it's still a minority of the population that goes to college. But all of this process consumes huge resources,
mm-hmm.
You have to ask yourself, why are we doing this? Why are we applying these resources? We've talked about democracy, but there's also a tendency, increasing tendency, to want to businessize schools. To look at it essentially from a purely economic standpoint, that if we invest this money now, then the earning potential over it will be greater than the earning potential. Well, that's interesting, but that's not what a liberal arts education is about.
And it's not what education is about.
Which is the long way around saying or asking, why do we consume all these resources? Have we lost sight of what education's about at each of these levels?
Well, I think partly because we think it teaches you how to think and be creative and analytical, and that's the way that we are going to solve a whole range of issues facing us, whether it's sustainability, whether it's economic distribution, whether it's, you know, an artistic expression, and that ability to think and analyze critically is at the foundation of a liberal arts education. And we want to give students a range of exposures to different disciplines, but also to sharpen some of those skills so that as the world evolves, they will have the ability to grapple with those things.
Well, I think we must make no mistake, there are tremendous challenges ahead. It's not like everything's going to be swell from here on out. When you look at global climate change, when you look at the massive dislocation of people all over the world, the teetering condition of many of the developed nations, starting with the United States. There are all kinds of things. It's not going to be easy, and we cannot do business as usual. And I go really back to democracy. If we are going to be a self-governing people, that light on the hill that once upon a time we were, if we are going to continue to have a sense of what is important in terms of human rights, in terms of life's rights, other species' rights, all of these are tough questions. And the ability to pass a test isn't what we need from our youngsters.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've heard it said that what we are most successful at as a country is actually education, and that is our greatest export. And if you look at the student bodies on many of our college and universities campuses, they're very diverse. Many international students are coming here. And even into the high school levels. My son's high school has a lot of international students, and I was talking to some high school counselors here, and there are a lot of international students who are coming here. And so it's interesting because there is some concern about China and India are graduating all these people and so forth. But from what I hear, the quality of American higher education is still unsurpassed. And it is in part because of our insistence on broad-based liberal arts education, that we are not as specialized as some of the other nations, and including Western nations. And it is this ability to give people a broad-based education, which really does sharpen, I would argue, the analytical and critical thinking ability, that is what is very distinctive about American education.
There's a twin here. I would argue that America's greatest export is our entertainment.
Well, that.
And if you're looking at the importance of this cultural Well, there are people who call it cultural imperialism. If you're looking at all the stuff that we send out, television and movies, around the world, and you look at our own mass media, that has abysmally failed us in the last 8 years in particular, but simply, I mean, and this is talking about family, the American media has not done its job, at which point education becomes even more important, because if you have dumbing down in the mass media and you've got people who don't know any better, you've got a real problem. Back to John Adams.
It's very funny you mention that, because we have a world-class jazz studies program, and we're going to be building a new gold lead certified building for our jazz studies program to give it the kind of shine that
yes,
it really
President
needs.
Oberlin College.
Yes, but we'll make a bigger point here, which is that as I talk to some of our students who have studied jazz and are very accomplished, they tell me that they're actually more appreciated out of the country than they are in. And that some other countries really appreciate this very indigenous music form that we have, art form that we have in jazz, and there's tremendous interest in music, both jazz and classical, outside of this country, and one of the great things.
And then
things
there is hip hop, of course.
Right. Well, you know, that's also you know, something that is got its own artistic merit, but I think that we are a great exporter of culture. And education, and one of the things that Oberlin we're trying to do is trying to be an international beacon in terms of the arts as well.
We'll be back in just a moment with President Marvin Krisloff, at which point Bill will be able to say what it is that I so rudely cut off. Be with us when we return in a moment. We're back with Marvin Krisloff, who is both attorney Marvin Krisloff and president of Oberlin College. Bill Russell?
You pointed to something about which is the quality of higher education. I sat through last week, 30 or 40 minutes of slides on the basically test results of particular high school students around about the country, and it's not a pretty picture. And there is some good news nominally, and that having talked to the tests, some of the test scores are getting better. But as you talk about, I mean, again, the potential for a serious divide. We still have this, you know, what, 30%, under 30% of Americans go to college, or at least graduate from college.
And you also said that something like 30% of the high school kids are not graduating.
Well, that's one of the dirty little secrets.
Oh.
It's something we don't know.
And even more.
We don't know. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we think it may be 70%. It could be as low as 60%. In Georgia is at the lower end of some of those scales, but we really do not know.
And we don't talk about it.
But it seems to me that there is a deep peril, even to the universities and colleges. You have this success, but it is built to the outside observer. It looks like quicksand, unless we're... Well, it's interesting. Georgia has done a fairly smart thing. They've outsourced education. We have outsourced education. Atlanta has grown.
It's an insidious smart thing.
Well, I'm not endorsing it, but essentially, Atlanta has grown tremendously. It's one of the most rapid growing, both in terms of people, but also economically. And what we're doing is bringing in people that you've trained
elsewhere. Mostly
in New York.
Yeah.
We tended to rely heavily on the New York school system, but we're bringing in people to fill the higher paying jobs from functioning school systems, and we have done basically an abysmal job here. And I say that not to pick on Georgia, just because I'm familiar with it. But it seems to me if we don't address this all the way down, the kind of thing you're doing in your local community, but you know, we've got to somehow find a way to generalize that. And it seems to me that your peers, as leaders in higher education, have to be deeply concerned about what we're going to do going all the way down to kindergarten.
There is great concern, and I've been part of those discussions, and I can tell you that many colleges and universities are doing a lot of the programs the way I've described them. There are resource problems, and you know, so the question is, do you spend more money focusing on a K-12 enhancement program or a teacher ed program, or do you provide more international experiences for your students, or do you provide more research support for your faculty? And there are some colleges and universities that have unlimited resources. That's a very, very few. And Oberlin College, while we're doing very well, does not have the kinds of resources to do whatever we want. And so we do have to make hard choices. But I'm hopeful that the government and the philanthropic sector and the corporate sector will realize that it's important to invest. And what you're talking about is investing in our future. And I the America's Promise, Colin Powell's organization, just recently released this report that showed that the graduation rates in inner city high schools were shocking, particularly in areas like Cleveland and Detroit, some areas that I'm familiar with, well under 50%. And this is just terribly discouraging. And of course, it's not clear that all of those high school graduates will necessarily have all the skills that they need, but at least that's some sort of a benchmark about what's happening. And it is a very frightening prospect, but I do think that it needs to be addressed on many, many different levels, and that college and university leaders can be voices and leaders, but we have to be joined by other folks if we're going to make this message.
This is everybody's problem. Yeah,
there was a, I'm not a great fan of McKinsey in general. They do some interesting work.
The consulting
and
group.
And they did a study that you're probably familiar with that, you know, trying to puzzle out how do you address particularly the these educational issues in primary and secondary schools. And the conclusion is that it was the core challenge, the difference between success, and they were looking internationally, success and failure, depending on how you define it, was essentially the reputation of the profession, particularly teachers. Was it a respected profession? Was it difficult to get into? Were the standards high? Were they respected in the communities? Were they, you know, were they people that there were held in esteem in the community?
Yes.
And it goes, I think, to what you're saying, but there's a specificity to it that I found useful in that study, that is that until we as a society, a culture, a body politic, or whatever, take education seriously, treat it as if it is a substantive, important, vital, integral part of our well-being, our survival, that everything else is going to be palliative. Does that, I mean, you're nodding your head.
I'm nodding my head because, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm going back for my high school reunion this summer, and I actually am working on writing something about some of my high school teachers who were so important to me. And I think about them, and I think about what they have done for not only me, but other graduates of my high school, which was a public high school in Lexington, Kentucky. And, you know, you worry that we are not thanking those teachers enough. And you do worry that we're not giving them enough status. God knows we're not giving a lot of money, but it's certainly status and respect to keep them going back year after year, because those jobs are incredibly draining. And if you think about, I teach, but you know, I teach a smaller number, and
you don't do it from 9 to 5
right,
every day.
It's not the same. It's
well,
not,
and you picked them.
That's right. Yep.
I mean, you got to select, which
that's
is,
right.
which is
a
different.
A public high school teacher takes what comes in the door, and she or he has to work with that. And, you know, to turn around someone's life is just the greatest gift. And I do think you're right, that part of that must be trying to recruit and retain accomplished individuals. And I have heard anecdotally about there seems to be some movement back. Sometimes people in second careers are going back to teaching high school, and I think Teach for America very interestingly has tapped into this desire to transform the public schools. I worry about how many of those Teach for America graduates actually will end up staying in the schools, and it would be an important question to think about what can we do to tap into this impulse of idealistic young people to try to take the public schools and really take it into a long-term transformation.
Well, in a way, this goes to what Robert Putnam, I think, was writing about, the engagement.
When he talked about bowling alone.
The engagement in the community. Uh-huh. And the sense, one, the engagement is if, you know, we are all part of this community and act as if that's the case. And with that as a predicate, then acknowledging, recognizing, understanding how important learning is, not just education, not the narrow sense.
Yeah.
But that how critical that is to us as in terms of the quality of our individual lives, the lives of our smaller, you know, the community we touch, but the bigger one, the one that we all inhabit up to and including the world.
More learning to happen in just a moment. We'll be back shortly with President Marvin Krisloff for a couple more minutes. Be with us.